been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win.
You are listening to the Seattle Shrimp Tank, coming to you live every other week on Tuesdays at 4 p.m. in the 505 Broadway Studios. I am Brad Berger, co-hosting with Dan Whedon, and you can always catch a replay of the podcast at seattle.shrimptankpodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes so you never miss an episode.
Hello, Brad.
Hey, Dan. How's it going?
Good. You know, I got a question for you.
What is that?
What do John Paul Jones and Roger Staubach have in common?
Go Army?
No. They both played quarterback at Navy.
Okay.
Now, John Paul Jones played quarterback way back in the beginning, you know, and he was actually not fighting Army. He was fighting the British forces. But Roger Staubach, of course, the great Hall of Fame quarterback, was a Naval Academy grad. And, you know, I have to tell you, my dad served 30 years in the Navy. Fought in World War II. He was in a minesweeper. And so I grew up as a Navy kid. And so this weekend, when the midshipmen and the cadets clash, I'll be rooting, I'll be saying go Navy. And my next question for you is, because I know you're an Army guy, when you were an Army, when you were at West Point, what was the Army-Navy record? And question number, while you were there, and then question number two is, is this going to be year 15 in a row for the midshipmen?
So I will answer your two questions after you answer my question.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And that is, how many naval plebes does it take to screw in a light bulb?
I'm going to say zero. I have no idea what the answer, but I'm just going to go out on a limb and say zero.
Yeah, it is zero because that's a senior level course. So to answer the question... our record was actually quite good, with the exception of the pleasure of being flown out to Pasadena, California to get our butts whooped in the Rose Bowl when we played Navy back in 1983. 84, 85, 86 were quite great seasons for Army. In fact, I know for a fact that at least two, if not all three of those years, we beat Navy. Oh, okay. It was quite a rivalry. And in fact, during a portion of that time, West Point also had possession of the Commanders in Chief trophy, which meant that we had beaten both Air Force and Navy. So that's why I'm always puzzled by the last few years, or now what hopefully does not turn into a decade and a half, because it has been very painful to watch and to support Army. It was during my tenure there was always very, very close. One of the things that I think was most notable, and I don't know, since you're catching me off guard answering this question, but I want to say that even during that 3-year period where I believe we won those three games in 84, 85, and 86, the total point differential was something around 10 or 11 points. So wow. The games, they weren't blowouts. And one of the things that I've noticed recently is these games, other than like last year, which I think, and potentially the year before, they just seem to be incredibly lopsided, where the teams aren't even close to being evenly matched, and Navy has dominated Army, at least from a score standpoint. So I'm hoping it's not number 15. I'm really hoping that the Army's got a better team. And the fact that Navy's missing two of their star players might give us the handicap that we need.
Well, what do you think some of the differences with players are today back then when things were different? Anything changed structurally or organizationally, do you think?
I don't think so. It's been one of the things that's been on my mind with regard to, you know, what are the challenges that the Army program is having, and is it a recruiting issue? Is the Navy as a potential career? Because again, that's one of the things that the service academies are recruiting for, because one of the issues is once these young men are done playing football, and I can use the terminology young men because there is not currently a co-ed football teams at the service academies, once they are done playing, the expectation is they will be commissioned along with their class at the end of their senior year.
Yeah.
I know that that has been a challenge for Army. Some of the players get pretty beat up.
Yeah.
And also, when you're asking them to be competitive at a collegiate level and put on a significant amount of weight, the thing there is no waiver. They do have to meet Army height and weight standards when they ultimately get commissioned. And I think that's been rough for some players. And I don't know if that's impactful at all, or if there's just a different mindset of individuals who are attracted to one of the service academies over the other.
Interesting. Well, you know what? I would say this before we go on to meet our guest. I think we should wager a cookie on this Army Navy, and then in 2 weeks, the other person will have to eat the our next session. Other person will have to watch. The loser will have to watch the winner eat the cookie.
Fair enough.
Okay. Hey, listen. I'd love to talk more Army Navy, but we've got a guest here. And Brad, I'd like to introduce to you Ingemar Anderson. I've known Ingemar for a couple of years, maybe 3 years now. But the most important thing for me with Ingemar is he is my publisher. He's my publisher. So my new book book came out in 2015, Unleashed Leadership. Through Ingemar's publishing company, Kitsap Publishing, he's the one that got it out there. And so I'm very excited to have him today, and we're going to ask him some questions regarding publishing in the 21st century.
Well, I'd like to share with our audience a little bit more about Ingemar. Ingemar Anderson is a founder of 4 successful businesses, a book author, a professional speaker, investor, analyst executive offering 25 years of experience leading cross-functional teams of technical experts and business management. Ingemar received his MBA and has over 20 years of experience working with and leading cross-functional teams to invent, design, implement, validate, market, sell, and operate business systems. He has advised and supported executive management of many Fortune 500 companies in diverse industries. And Ingemar has extensive experience in successfully converting complex business ideas and technological challenges into profitable business solutions. Ingemar started Kitsap Publishing in September of 2014 in response to a strong demand from many local and regional authors for a service to convert their manuscripts into physical and electronic books. And quickly, Kitsap Publishing has evolved into a known authority for book publishing. And since 2016 has started offering a new program called Publishing for Professionals, which I hope we learn more about. So on behalf of the Seattle Shrimp Tank podcast, we'd like to welcome you, Ingemar.
Thank you very much, Brad and Dan, to have me here. It's an honor.
You bet. Well, thanks for I'm really intrigued when I read your bio and I looked at your LinkedIn page and many of the activities that you're involved in. This is going to be a great show.
Yeah. Brad, you want to lead off with the first question?
So one of the things that I am interested in is, what was it, as you know, you have what I'll call the kind of the collapsing medium of print through the last, you know, great recession in the downturn, which we've seen social media and digital media on the rise. But we also have seen many newspapers and traditional print outlets go out of business. What possessed you to start a publishing company?
Well, this is an absolutely great question. Honestly, I didn't expect that question, but I think that's the most appropriate question. My wife and I, Barbara, we bought Kitsap Printing in 2013. And, you know, what I learned is, you know, you should act counter-cyclical, which is exactly what we did, because printing is really something that was on the downturn for the last 10 years, at least. However, what we discovered and what was verified through the last few years is that printing is actually changing. And also, that's what we started with the printing company, which we bought. And Kitsap Publishing is a different animal, right? So that's what I started a year later, because we realized that it's not just about printing and everything around it. So it's everything around it. So you need to have an application for the printed material. And that's what we try to apply and provide as well.
So Ingemar, small publishing companies, Are they, you know, are they the way to go? You see, we see a lot of self-publishing opportunities like Vervanti and some other places. Talk a little bit about how publishing has completely changed in a century.
That's a loaded question too. Thank you for asking.
I ask a lot of loaded questions. That's, I just want you to know that.
Very good. Publishing is a very interesting industry right now because it's in the midst of a huge change. And that starts on every level. It starts, first of all, with the authors. Authors are much more empowered today because they have social media. They have all these, word processing tools. They have different technology to, like, the iPhone, they can write wherever they want. Basically, they can make notes, take notes, voice notes on the airport. So the input, there's much more meat, or what do you say, like much more source for manuscripts, for ideas. So there's much more of that. And then what the printing industry we talked about, it's going down. By the way, I think the last year was the first year where printing and ebook books, I mean printed books and ebooks kind of leveled out. So printing came back a little bit and ebooks flattened out the first time. And that's another trend that's very important, meaning that the medium is changing. You know, we have much more ebooks now than we had just 5 years ago. I mean, the ebooks were just exploding. And with that comes a new technology as well. You know, how do people read? And in other words, things are changing so fast that you have to adapt very quickly. And that's always a good breeding ground for a new company. And that's where Kitsap Publishing is in a really good spot because we can follow up on that.
So you mentioned earlier, you know, having an application for that. So would you describe that a little more, the application that you feel that's the sweet spot for Kitsap Publishing?
Yeah, there is many sweet spots. When we started, there was just a high demand from authors who want to have their manuscript published, and there was a kind of a naive expectation. Oh, I'm going to be published. I'm going to be famous and rich and all of that. This didn't turn out for most of our authors. We have maybe one or two who really got successful, but not on a level, on a bestseller level. But the sweet spot is really where you can offer services now that all these different new people who are writing now, who are publishing, need. What we are targeting now in the future is this PFP, Publishing for Professionals program, where we target a certain clientele for the publishing services that we offer. So we cut one little piece out of the big cake to make sure we can hit that and make, you know, provide the best service we can.
So J.K. Rowling has not
knocked on the doors.
The Kitsap Peninsula wondering why you haven't offered to publish your next book.
Well, one thing I have to say, there's so much different. There are so many different. Not genres. A genres would be a description, but it's more than that. It's just like worlds, because they're different. There are people who write a book and think they're like done, you know, have a great manuscript, like J.K. Rowling. She wrote that, and how many years did it take for her to get really published? It took some time, and it was more a coincidence that she actually got famous, I think, the stories that I read about her. And that's happening today too. But so, yeah, there are so many different kinds of people that publish.
And Ingemar, we're going to hear a lot more about this on the other side of the break. We are going to take that short break to hear from our sponsors. And when we come back with our guest, Ingemar Andersen, for our Hot or Not section of the show, we're going to find out what Ingemar thinks about love, marriage, and money. Don't walk away. We'll be right back with more of The Shrimp Tank.
The Seattle Shrimp Tank is brought to you by Cornerstone Financial Strategies. Financial planning is a lot like owning a sports team. If there's no one coordinating the team members, each will do what they do best individually, but lose as a team. Why? No one knows what the other's game plan is. At Cornerstone Financial Strategies, we understand that people try to hire the best professionals, attorney, CPA, financial advisor, etc., each for their specific expertise, but they may fail to have them communicate as one team with the same goal, your desires and values. This is why at Cornerstone Financial Strategies, we offer values-based, comprehensive financial planning. And since money is not the most important thing in life, we ensure your custom-catered, personalized plan will take into consideration your most important goals, aligned with your most deeply held values. For more information, Visit us on the web at www.liveyouridealife.com. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Financial planning and investment advice offered through Financial Advocates Investment Management, a registered investment advisor. DBA Cornerstone Financial Strategies, LLC, is a separate entity from LPL Financial.
Welcome back to the Seattle Shrimp Tank, where we interview some of the best and brightest CEOs in Seattle. I'm Dan Whedon, along with my partner in crime, the Army guy, Brad Berger.
Go Army.
Our guest today is Ingemar Andersen. You'll be able to catch the replay both on our website at seattle.shrimptankpodcast.com. And go subscribe on iTunes, and it'll pop right into your podcast. For our next segment, Ingemar, we get to play a little game. There are no prizes involved, so don't hold your breath on that. But we're going to do a segment called Hot or Not, where we're going to ask you a few questions, or actually we're going to give you a concept or a topic, and you're going to tell us whether it's hot or not and why. I mentioned love, marriage, and money. Here's hot or not number one. Being married to your business partner, hot or not?
Well, that is...
That's a hot or not. Is it hot or is it not?
It's not.
Oh, not. No, why?
Well, it's... Barbara, I work with Barbara. And
I knew that. Business, that's why I asked that question.
Asking, right. Well, it's a hot, it's important. It's something that we do, but it doesn't need to be hot. I mean, it's okay to work, in separate areas. I don't think it's hot. It would be the wrong word, but it's fun. Let's put it that way. It's really fun. Well, so that way said, it's hot.
I think I got him a little hot under the collar. He got a little red here, Brad.
That's okay. This is what this is meant for.
This is exactly what it is. Do you have a hot or not for him?
Well, I should say also beat the hell out of Navy. So we're going to go on. You started this. Ingemar, hot or not, self-publishing?
It's hot.
Okay. I'm surprised to hear that.
That's what but many people ask me, do I self-publish or do I go with you? I say go self-publish because there are so many services people need. They cannot do everything themselves. It's mm-hmm. impossible. So, and we try to offer any help they need. So there's always a spot for us as a publisher. And I really, as a matter of fact, you have to be out as a writer, as an author. You have to be out there anyway. There's no way you can sit in your dark room and just write something and think you're going to be famous or it's going to be read. No, it's going to be not.
Okay.
Okay. I have a hot or not for you. Ingemar, hot or not, writing your own autobiography?
Well, if you have the time to do it, it's hot. You should, because it's an experience in itself. You should really do it. I think it's a really great learning experience. If you don't have the time, you let it write. Somebody else write it. I think that's a good experience, too, if you have the money. It's definitely hot. It's a good experience, I think.
How about let me add on to it? What if you're an entrepreneur, a CEO, of a business owner, writing about your product, your service? Some businesses might look and say, well, I don't have a book in me for this. What would you tell them?
I think every person has a book really in them. It's incredible. Like, especially when authors come in my office and they talk to me and say, and they reveal what their life experience was. It blows me off the chair sometimes. It's just a normal person. You wouldn't expect that. So I think everybody has a story to tell.
Yeah. Well, that may cue me up for my question or hot or not, ghostwriting.
Yes. If somebody, it's $100,000, what I heard, I give you a number right here, and now somebody who can do that for you.
Or maybe not so much.
And then everything would be done for you. I think it's a way to, like, especially biographies. I mean, which politician writes their own biography?
Right.
I don't think anyone. They don't have the time. And there are good ghostwriters out there. I'm in favor. And, I think it's a great idea. But if you have the time, on the other hand, writing yourself is... it's better. You have a better experience. Just writing about whatever you think is always a good exercise in any way, even if you don't publish it.
Well, Ingemar, I want to go back to what we were talking about right before the break. You were talking about a segment, segmenting out a group for a new program you're doing. Can you talk a little bit more about that program and what group you're actually targeting?
So the program is called Publishing for Professionals, PFP. What that program is a very specific program for professional speakers mostly, but also for industry experts who have a good background in their whatever skills or profession they have, and they want to write a book or have written a book, especially people who have written a book and are at the point where they want to have a publisher to publish the book, but not in the traditional sense to have it listed on Barnes & Noble and everywhere. That's hard to get in anyway, but they have their own business model. So people who have their own business model, they speak, they need books printed because books are it's like almost a business card nowadays, a book. You have to have a book, you know, to hand somebody. It's a tangible thing, or an ebook as well. You can use that as an ebook promotion for yourself as well. So that is a program specifically for industry experts who want to have that kind of niche where they, or call it product or service that they want to offer for their clientele, to offer something in addition to their services. And we do all the logistics. We ship to hotels, we ship to companies, we print the books, we do changes, we do customizations like special edition on the book, these things. So we want to really be a service provider for professional speakers.
Well, that really brings in a couple of questions that I have, because of course Dan and I are both authors. Dan, of course, was the his latest book, Unleashed Leadership, was published through your firm. I, of course, have a book that was published about the same time frame, May of 2015, by a different publisher. Didn't know you at the time, Ingemar. But what are some of the telltale signs of, especially for individuals that you just described, who are doing it primarily because they want to promote themselves, they want to promote their service, their way of doing a particular niche in a market? What are some telltale signs of really good content and good publishing versus not so good content and not so good publishing?
So here's the first rule for any publisher: a book needs to be engaging. The word engaging is magic, because if a book is engaging, people will buy it. And when they buy it, they will read the story, they will pay you the money for the book, and you're good. If a book is not engaging, that's a challenge. It's the first kind of thing I'm looking for. Of course, how the book is written, the content, you know, is it edited well? Sometimes, you know, we have one book, for example, written by somebody who came from Germany, wrote a book about a very compelling story. It was not edited very well, but that's her. So we left it alone. We edited just a little bit and, you know, have it out there, because that's what, like, authentic. So you want to make sure the book hits, you know, on certain notes and engages them with people. That's really the only major thing that I would point out at this point.
Well, you know, something that's interesting, you mentioned engaging, and one of the things that I really learned in going through the couple books that I wrote is how important the cover is. It's like when I go to buy wine, I may not know the wine, but I'm really looking at that labeling. Talk about how it's just not an afterthought. You have to really put some thinking into what your cover looks like, regardless if it's a hard copy or they're looking at it on Amazon.
So the same thing that is true for the whole book is true mostly for the cover. That's exactly right. The cover is the first thing that, first of all, we develop and look at. Many authors come to us, they have already a cover developed. Sometimes we say, well, that's great. It looks good. You know, based on our experience, it will work. Sometimes it doesn't. We totally redo it. In 80% of the cases, we currently make the cover for them, and we have special teams that sit down. We have local resources. We have also, you know, online resources that we can reach out to make sure the cover hits exactly what we want to, you know, the people, so the cover reaches the people, because that's the first, and you know, you wouldn't believe it, but the spine is much more important than people think.
Why is that?
Because that in the bookstore, that's what you see first. Mm. You don't see the book. How many books do you see from the front in the bookstore? And, you know, I call the bookstore people the spine people, because that's that's what they look at first. You know, how does the spine look? I was surprised about that.
Well, but better not having a spine, I guess.
Or being spineless.
Yeah, but the cover is the most important engaging element.
It's interesting because, of course, at the end of this show, I'm going to give you a copy of my book. I would love to be – I'm always open for a critique. and constructive criticism on what we've done. Obviously, you know, the only cat in that fight is the fact that you might have some suggestions on how, you know, future releases of this book could go. But I remember very distinctly the fact that I had written this outline years ago and had been carrying it around, and I had the title. And the title was one of the things they wanted me to give up, and I absolutely refused to. And we published it with my title. And the one thing that I can share with you is it puts a smile on people's face. It is an unforgettable element of that. So it's stop trying to keep up with the Joneses. They're broke anyway. And there's a subtitle to that as well. But how important is the title of a book?
The title is very important, but you're right. You know, I know many instances, I couldn't list one now, but I, in my, you know, experience in the past 2 years, there were many instances where a title that the author picked worked actually better than the publisher or any other publisher suggested. Mm-hmm. And it's because that's really you, the author, you want to put that kind of first instant, you know, reference in their mind when they see the title. The title is important. The title is not copyrightable, so you can copy any title you want anyway, if a title works. A title, there are many rules for titles, you know, that they should recognize, should be recognizable, or they should be like catchy. There are some rules, but if you have a great title, I think that represents the author. I think you try to go with it, but sometimes it doesn't work.
It'd be okay if I called my next book Unleashed Leadership.
Well, you have to ask Dan.
He's just trying to keep up with the Joneses is what he's just trying to do, or keep up with the Whedons. And
well, you can
you need to have a dog named Captain Jack.
There are copyright issues that you have to think. The title is not copyrightable, but I know that Dan was working on many copyright or trademark.
Well, you know, it just made me think of something. You know, Brad asked on the Hot or Not about self-publishing. One of the advantages of going to somebody like you is that you're going to do some consulting. You know what? I'm going to bring that question up. I'm going to bring it up, though, however, after we do a special feature. So I'm going to remember that. We're going to take a short break to hear from our sponsors. And when we come back with our guest, Ingemar Andersen, for the Plead the Fifth section of the show, I'm going to have Ingemar take a stroll into Jurassic Park. Don't walk away. We'll be right back on the Shrimp Tank.
The Seattle Shrimp Tank is brought to you by Toro Consulting. Dan Whedon helps small and medium-sized business owners and entrepreneurs to grow, protect, and transfer the wealth of their businesses to create a better life for themselves. In nearly 30 years, he's worked with well over 300 businesses in all industries around the country to exponentially improve results around revenue generation, executive development, and resiliency that assure ongoing and sustainable operations. Dan is one of a select few consultants in the world honored as a member of the Million Dollar Consulting Hall of Fame. He got there because he has helped improve the condition of so many entrepreneurs and their companies. If you'd like to know how he could do the same for you, call him. He'll be glad you did. Dan can be reached at 360-271-1592 and dan@danwhedon.com.
You are in the Shrimp Tank, where we interview some of the best and brightest CEOs in the Seattle and Puget Sound area. I'm Dan Whedon, along with my co-host, the Army Brat. Brad Berger.
That's true.
That worked. Brad Berger. By the way, catch a replay of this podcast on our website, www.seattle.shrimptankpodcast.com, or go to iTunes and get it there. Hey, listen, Ingemar, before I ask you that question, because we're going to come back to that, I'm going to make sure we ask that, but we're going to do another game where you win absolutely nothing called Plead the Fifth. And it's my goal always to make you plead the fifth. So you have one, you can say, I'm not going to answer, I'm going to plead the fifth. Otherwise, you got to answer. So I mentioned something about Jurassic Park. Here's my plead the fifth. Are the large corporate publishing houses going the way of the dinosaur? Are they heading into extinction?
The answer is no. My conclusion at this point, because I think what they are changing their business model. In the past, every publisher goes through this process. They take every author in, and then they only take 10%, and the big publishers they don't take any new blood. That's what I perceive right now. And every author that comes up with a great, great book, has their own platform, or a small publisher who promotes them, and then a big publisher comes and picks them up and makes the big bucks because they have the big presses, they have the big capital still. The question is, you know, how is it, are they working their new business model as successful as the other one, the previous one? I think they will. I think there will be different kind of publishers available or, you know, existent in about 10, 20, 30 years. I think that's the way it's going to go.
Okay. Brad, do you have Plead the Fifth?
I do.
Oh, good.
Because I'm sure this is on the minds of everybody out in the audience, and that is, so, I published my book. How much money can I make?
As much as you want.
Okay.
And that is probably the most accurate answer, because nowadays, with the marketing tools that we all have, we online, you can really achieve, do a lot of things. We have right now 8 systems, online systems that are all interconnected, and they're all marketing systems with email, you know, synchronization, and, you know, platforms for landing platforms that are connected to the, you know, even CRM system. So everybody can really do this very cheaply. So when you have time and if you get the right team together, you can sell as many books. Another question that I got, like, how long do I have to promote my book? And I say, as long as you want to sell it. That's yeah. really the case. Unless a big publisher comes and picks you up and does all the work for you, because you're J.K. Rowling. She doesn't do that anymore, I guess, the promoting part. But there are many Bainbridge Island authors, very, very famous ones, that still do a lot of self-promoting on Facebook, and they go to events, book signings. So you can always do that.
Just like, have you ever run into Debbie McComber?
Yeah, that's the one that I...
In Port Orchard, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
For hair for her, yeah.
That was not my Plead the Fifth. I have a better one for that. But here it is. There's a Plead the Fifth. Ingemar, if you knew then what you know now about the publishing business, would you still do it?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't even get it out of my... Holy cow.
I was expecting
that. You were expecting that.
Because it's fun. I really like it. You know, I didn't think I would like it so much, but it is such an honor and such a privilege to get to know all their people's stories. And I still can, because we are not big enough to... So I have like 50 people working on it. I'm talking to every author. And it, even if we don't get to a contract, which is, you know, the case, it's just not for everyone. But the stories that I hear, it's just fun. And we have a great team who helps me, supports me. My wife is one of them. So I'm really grateful for that.
Well, Ingemar, we've spent enough time together today that I think you'll understand that I'm having fun with this next question. And it is Plead the Fifth. But as I read your very impressive resume, your biography, and your LinkedIn profile, what is it with you and not being able to keep a job?
Yeah, okay. You know what? I don't consider that I have a job, really. Because I have 4 companies that I run right now. 2 of them are not really a lot of work intensive. But I like just the fact that I can pick what I want to do, and right now I'm focusing on publishing, and I will make it successful. It is already successful on a low level, but we want to really reach for the stars for Kids Up Publishing. And, you know, honestly, I don't want to have a job in 2 or 4 years. I wouldn't be surprised. I want to be at the beach or on a yacht somewhere. I'm talking to my wife already about that. Probably we won't do that in 5 years, maybe in 15. But no, I mean, why would I have a job that I don't like?
You know, one of the things that we talked about last time, Dan, is you and I probably spending some time over the holidays writing a blog post on a lot of the similarities that I'm starting to see. And I will share with you 2 that came out of this conversation today. And so one of the reasons I would encourage our listeners to go back, even if they've listened to a podcast once or never, to go back and listen to it again, because what you're going to start to do is pick out these common themes. Because I loved your answer, Ingemar, and that is, most entrepreneurs do not consider what they do to be a job. I loved how you answered that question. And the other thing, you started our interview out with when I asked about publishing and the word innovation. And one of the things that I find out about the individuals that we've been interviewing on the Seattle Shrimp Tank podcast, Dan, is a lot of common threads in innovation and being an entrepreneur, a serial entrepreneur, keeps rising to the top of that list.
One thing I'll add to that, my professional mentor, Alan Weiss, has said something to this extent. I don't have a job. I live my life. I do what I really like, and people pay me for it. And I've loved that. You know, I just live my life. I do what I like, and people pay me for it. I'm going to go back to the question because I want to make sure we have time for it. And this is a great segue into it. Somebody who wants to self-publish, it's a lot of work on their part. They have to think about cover. They have to think about editing. They have to think about all of that. By using you, they're getting a lot of consultative work. They're getting somebody to help them traverse the swamps of what's a cover going to look like? What if I don't have a title? All of that information. I'm guessing you're going to agree with that, but talk a little bit about somebody who wants to write a book but doesn't really know where to start. How can you help them?
Basically, we would do everything for them if they wanted to. If they have a Word file, which most people have, some people even have, with a type machine.
A typewriter?
Typewriter machine.
A typewriter?
Yes.
What is that?
We got that manuscript in just twice already. So we scanned that in. So, but when typically they have Word, so they would come in and we could do everything for them. As you're right, we want to consult them to do as much as possible themselves. And is that where you're going with your question?
Well, no. By the way, I just had Angela Lansbury flash in front of my when he said he was getting things in on a typewriter.
Murder, she wrote.
Well, I was thinking is that there are people out there who you say, oh, you know, I want to write a book before I die, and I have this novel or I have this whatever it is in my head, but I don't know where to start. It's publishers like you. It's small publishers like you that are able to help them take that idea and turn it into a reality before it gets too late, right?
Well, we have actually several of these cases where they came in. This person was 90 years old, and the wife came with him, and then they gave me this manuscript, and I'm very honored about that, much about local history and everything. And we have it in our drawers. We want to publish it. We told them we publish it. So we have it in our pipeline. Question is priority. You know, how much effort can we, how much capacity do we have? And we want to publish it. We have a contract with them, and it's, you know, we used to have different versions of contracts for publishing agreements. We tend to, you know, simplify it and only have one or two and be more flexible. But so if they come to us, we try to help them, because what we really want to do is we're going to get these stories out.
Well, I'm interested in what your process is. Obviously, Dan knows the process that he followed with you. I know the process that I followed with my publisher. If I were coming to you with my second book idea, and I said, okay, Ingemar, I want to engage Kitsap Publishing to be my next publisher for the follow-on to my hit book, what would the process be?
Well, for non-fictional books, typically you have a book proposal, which Dan came with one, and we have other proposals for non-fiction books. So that's what I would ask you for. And it includes a marketing idea. So what is your plan to get the book out there? And that is important for a publisher, because that takes work away from the publisher to actually create a case for the book. And that's the important part. The technical part to make from a manuscript, to convert a manuscript into a book, is not that difficult. We can help you with that. That's the next step. The first step before we do that is a publishing contract, which we always have to sign with you, because we sell your book, right? You give us the right to sell your book, and that has to be done in a contract form. Mm-hmm. So you have to sign it. Then you get royalties for it in the contract. It defines what the royalty is. And once we sign it, we get to work. We get the book out there. You get a galley proof. That's the first book. This is not a galley proof, but it looks just like a book, and it has some information, the draft on it.
Right.
And then you can approve it as author, and then you get a review copy that's going to be handed out to different, you know, people. You want us to keep people, or maybe to bookstores, maybe to your clients for feedback.
Reviewers?
Reviewers who mm-hmm. write reviews that you can even put on the book if you want to. And once the review copy is done, the book basically is ready to be published. And it's going to move from pre-published or pre-order status to order status in our system. And then people can buy it. We're going to put it on Amazon, which is kind of the quasi-standard. If a book is not on Amazon nowadays, it doesn't exist.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. And so this, I guess it's a good place for me to butt in mm-hmm. on that. Amazon not only is the place people go, but there's recommendations, and that's the place. Talk about the process of, after having written the book and you got the hardcover and you're all proud of it, how important is it to transition into an online platform quickly?
Very. I think that's the key. My belief really is the new publishers and new authors need to be online everywhere. They need to have their own social platform, complete author, we call it author platform, which is basically all put together that, you know, the outside world sees of you. And that's everything. That's your landing page, your author page, your Facebook page, your LinkedIn page. You need to be present. You need to have interviews with radio stations. You know, that's always a good thing. We do this, by the way, right now with some of our authors, local TV, to get them out there. So, right.
What do you think for our listeners who, you know, obviously are entrepreneurs and probably have an idea, they may have a product, they may have an ongoing business, they're just looking for ideas. If they were going to take on this concept of, I think I want to be published, and there's many reasons they want to do that, what do you think would be the primary advantage for most of our listeners of why they should publish a book, and what would they get out of it?
Well, if you're a personal, like if you don't have a business, mostly it's because of two reasons. You want to give books to your family and you want to leave a legacy, or you want to really become rich because you think you're such a great novel writer, right? So that's from that perspective. But that's typically very hard, a hard path to go along. If you have a business, there are like at least 10 reasons I can list there on our website. I can try to hit most of them. One would be you have something you can give your client to explain about what you're doing as your why are you the business to go to, right? You can explain that in a long, lengthy form, and people can wouldn't have the time to ask you all these questions. The second thing is you can promote your business. You know, you can just hand them like business cards. You can, if it's a small book, it's not very expensive. You can just hand them out. You can sell them. Of course, you can also use it as another revenue source, which most people in business don't. They just use it as a promotional tool. Another big reason why you should write a book, and you know, if you publish it or not, but it's just the process of writing about what you're doing every day, this will increase just your own understanding what you're doing, how to phrase it, how to explain it to somebody. So that's a big benefit. There are 6-7 other reasons, mm-hmm. but it's really interesting that publishing a book is really something that everybody in business should really do.
And so I'm going to ask you to do a little bit of your own marketing. This is your opportunity to tell everybody listening, how do they reach you? They've all of a sudden said, hey, we want to write that book. How do they reach you?
KitsubPublishing.com. One word, no dashes or spaces. KitsubPublishing.com. And you will find everything on our website. We have a Facebook page as well. Facebook, Kitsub Publishing. That's how they reach me. You can call me. There's a scheduling page, so you can schedule an appointment with me so I can make sure I take time, 1 hour, to talk to you about your project. So do that, and I get an email, and then it's scheduled on my calendar.
Well, Ingemar, we want to thank you so much for coming to the program today. As we find with most of our guests, this is the sort of conversation that could go on for much longer than the time that we have allotted. But we did want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to be with us and let our audience know about a potential opportunity that they have for themselves. Our next show on December 20th, we'll be interviewing Michelle Doyle of Michelle Interiors Incorporated. Make sure you check out all the replays on seattle.shrimptankpodcast.com. And remember, to become a shark, we all start out as shrimps. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. Welcome to the shrimp tank.
doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real, this life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This just what I do and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, but homie keep going. You know the saying, you can reap what you sow in. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, Roadie 2016. Like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general, from the front I'ma lead the charge. Like a federal, fell on my lap, never. Going hard as ever, the results match the effort. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it's take a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.